Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here, for traveling here, drove up here today. I know that for several of you it was really the first opportunity after we had all of the extra difficulties with the flooded ford and the road, which is still a work in progress, but we're pretty much back to regular access. So the ford down there at Herky Creek near the highway, before the storm of Valentine's Day, I was driving back that evening, and it probably had about an inch of water coming over the top, and we were driving through it, and there was this moment where you're like, okay, I'm going to go for it. And it's just, you just kind of, this little bit of water, but just drive. And it was no problem, but it felt a bit sketchy because it never come over the top of a road before. And then with, fast forward to a couple of weeks later, where it was about 60 feet across, about a foot and a half, a foot of water. And we were kind of driving and putting it in first and going 25 miles an hour and just kind of, going across it. And it's amazing how, you know, the context changes and you get used to something. And you get used to, not that I advise doing that, you know, always better to not cross a flooded ford, but sometimes you have to. But it's nice to see the sun come out and spring to begin in earnest, and things begin to warm up a little bit, although it might still be a little cold in here this morning. But here at the centre, yeah, we're hoping, which is always a kind of an awkward word we can use in Zen practice. We're hoping for an easier time of it weather-wise. I'm sure we all are, but we'll see what does occur, and I'm sure we'll just respond to whatever reality brings us. Tenshin Roshi is in the UK. Well, that's what he said anyway. Allegedly, he's in the UK, unless he's living a double life as a spy and he's somewhere else. But he's in the UK, and he's gone to see Dave Scott, who's one of Tenshin's successors, like a damn brother of mine, where he'll give Dave Inca at the end of session this week. Inca is the final seal of approval for a Zen teacher that has Dharma transmission. So typically you would teach for, it varies somewhat between the lineages, but usually you would teach for 10 years. And there was also a thing which more from Japan where you would be older than 55 and then you would be eligible for Inca. So 10 years of that he'll have been teaching, and then he gets that seal of approval. And I talked with Dave briefly yesterday, just wishing him the best for that. I was telling him that I felt like it was it was a collective achievement. I felt like I was sharing in it, sharing that achievement. Yeah, because it's like many different lives, many people's labors and efforts sort of all gone together down the years, like the Sangha practice, the shared practice. And whenever somebody, you know, so-called achieves a rank, then there's a lot of, many people's efforts that have gone into that. I wanted to bring up a koan this morning about rank. From a book of equanimity, this case 38, Rinzai's True Man. So the preface to the assembly: taking a thief for a son, perceiving a servant as master. A broken wooden ladle, how can this be the dried skull of an ancestor? A donkey saddle cannot be the lower jaw of a grandfather. When the land is split up and the thatched roof is partitioned, how do we distinguish the master? The main case. Attention. Rinzai addressed the assembly, saying, there is a true person of no rank. They are always leaving and entering the gates of your face. You beginners who have not witnessed him, look, look. Thereupon, a monk asked, how about this true person of no rank? Rinzai got down from the seat and grabbed him. The monk hesitated. Rinzai pushed him away, saying, this true man of no rank, what a shit stick he is. So, well, coarse language to finish. But that's apparently, that is what he said, this true person of no rank. What an excrement stick he is. Apparently in those days, this is the days before you could buy your family pack of toilet roll at Smart and Final. So there's actually a kind of stick with a cloth on the end, and that was used to clean yourself. So that's what he's referring to. So Master Rinzai, of course, is the exemplar of the great ancestor of the Rinzai school, where we get this rank of Inca from, succession in the Rinzai school. We all look back to him, to early what would have been Tang China. So he's one of the greats of Zen. There are several schools of Zen. At one time, five principal schools, which became over time surviving two principal schools, Soto Zen and Rinzai Zen. Soto looks back to Master Tozan and his successor Sozan in China as the beginnings of the Soto school, and principally to Master Dogen and Master Keizan in the Soto school in Japan. So we have, that's our main lineage roots here at Yokoji. And the Rinzai school evolved and formed around the same time, give or take 100 years in China. When you look back that far, it's like 100 years doesn't seem so much. I'm sure it probably felt like a lot if you lived them. Back in that time, Master Rinzai came forward, and his school took on a different flavor than the Soto school. And here at Yokoji, we have a somewhat of the blend of the two principal schools, like the several Zen lineages. But Maizumi Roshi, who was the founder of this temple, was very rare in that he had succession in three different schools. Soto school through his father, Soto school through Yasutani Roshi, and then Rinzai school through lay teacher Kuryo Roshi. And so here we have this blend of what would typically be taken as Soto practice, which is Shikantaza, just sitting, emphasis, and what is typically more associated with the Rinzai school, koan practice, which is looking at cases like this one. So we bring those through. And it isn't so distinct, like in even in Japan, Soto school have often used koans, and Rinzai school has a different range of practices. But those generally, those Rinzai school is koan study, and Soto school is more just sitting. That blend also shows in the way we do certain things in the forms, like the kinhin. Slow kinhin is Soto Zen practice, as it was taught. Dogen's teacher in China, Tendo Nyojo, taught him slow kinhin and showed him that in the Dokusan room. In the abbot's quarters, showed him the slow walking. And the Rinzai school uses a faster walking, so we use both. In a very practical method. It wouldn't work well if we did fast and slow, because you'd have to jump up from your seat and start going really fast. But we have a group coming up later today who originate from the Rinzai School through John Paul Kelly. And they'll be doing session in the Zendo. They'll do their Rinzai session in the Zendo. We'll be sitting here. And they use that walkway around the Zendo for their fast kinning. They just do fast kinning. Okay, so Master Rinzai, justly greatly famous in Zen. And for those of you who have, I'm sure some of you are somewhat familiar with his teachings, some of you may not be. Very direct. It's about as direct as you can be. Very direct. Always to the point. Always live expression. And not someone who either minced or wasted words. And at this point in China, when the teachings were done, typically it would be, they'd run up, it was like a flag that they would put up that said the teacher was going to give a talk, and then people from the surrounding area could come along. It's like some of these places had hermitages, which were spread around. They'd know there was a talk coming, and then it would be given often outside where people stood. So he'd come out and give a talk, and it'd often be a local dignitaries and people there. So this might be a situation, either in a hall or outside like that, where he'd pull the assembly together and then raise a question, a Zen question, but not in a dry discourse, but rather as always a challenge to the people who were there, with an encouragement, implicit encouragement, to sort of get involved and show your understanding. And he did this in a way of assuming that everyone who was there is very involved and should be giving their understanding. So he'd really put people on the spot too. So that really like sets the scene for what's going on here. You can imagine Master Rinzai has monks, perhaps nuns too, gathered together, and he's given this very short talk. Sometimes he'd give quite long talks and say things, but this is something shorter. Rinzai addressed the assembly, saying, "There is a true person of no rank. There is a true person of no rank." So he states this as a fact. He knows this, you know, he states this as a fact. You'd be welcome to challenge him and say he's wrong, but he says, there is a true person of no rank, always leaving and entering the gates of your face. You beginners who have not witnessed him, and that, you know, the pronouns are difficult here, it's not a matter of him or her, so we could throw that out. It's a person of no rank, leaving and entering the gates of the face. You beginners who have not witnessed this, look, look. So, you know, in Zen, we have these different ranks set up, different processes, methods that we follow along. Perhaps somebody comes in as a beginner, practices for a period of time, and then we have somebody become head trainee, usually after a few years of practice. They seem ready for that. And several people here who've done head trainee or completed it, and others who are sort of in the pipeline to do it. That would be maybe you could say that that's a rank. Somebody would do that. In fact, the first training period I came to here, in the year 2000, I think it was, Hector Balanos talked on this koan. This was his Shuso Hosen koan. It's amazing how these strands and these threads continue down the years. This morning, he came up as something. It was somebody years ago. We told the story how somebody years ago, the sick list wasn't in the sutra book when we were chanting, the Eno book. And somebody just said, instead of the names of the sick, they just said, all the people on the sick list. They had to do that instead. That was Hector. And that was like 19 years ago. And now we're still telling the story. Kind of funny. And so he talked on this koan. True man and no rank. So he was doing head trainee. Some people complete that and they go on and they do their study and they continue with a teacher and perhaps they become a Dharma holder, right? Or then go on and then get Dharma transmission. Some people go on and have Inca. So there are these ranks, but that's not what Master Rinzai is raising up. He's not talking about rank. He's not talking about status. He's not talking about self-identity. He's not talking about name, collection of histories and circumstances and descriptions. But rather, he says that there is a true person of no rank leaving and entering the gates of your face over and over. If you haven't seen that one, then you should look. Look. And he says it twice with emphasis. This is the important, the most important, really the only thing to do in Zen practice. The most important thing to do. That's what we... bring to the cushion. We don't bring it to the cushion. You know, we find ourselves on the cushion and then we have our... we're having our experience. Whatever that is. And however that's showing up for each of us today. Yeah, so we have... the content of what's going on with the body. Maybe someone's got a mild stomach upset today. Maybe somebody else has got a headache. Maybe someone else is on the verge of tears and somebody else is feeling angry. Whatever else, you know, every day the mix changes. The content changes. We show up time and time again. We say we show up to our cushion. Master Rinzai encourages us to look at the one true person of no rank. To look at, to experience this self nature. Often, this self-nature that we experience, we call it me and confuse me and my identity, preferences, the story that goes into who I am with the true person. Not that those things are separate, but particularly in the time of Zazen, that is not the time to examine that one, that person, the person who is the ever-changing content, the one who's always getting their ducks in a row, the one who's always fixing and adjusting. But rather, he asks us to look at the one true person that is always home, always present and aware, always behind the eyes, come rain or shine. but one who isn't reached or stained by the story that goes over the top. But rather the true person of no rank, the one who isn't accomplished, the one who hasn't gotten any awards, the one that doesn't need any awards, the one with no name. Rather looking and becoming truly intimate with that one. He implores the beginners particularly, you know, don't waste your time here with all, you know, with any scheme. Look at that one. Look at this true person of no rank. The one each one of us is. Turning in and looking at that essential mystery. Not confusing the ever-changing kind of me self, right? That's the one that looks at... That's the one that's confused by koans. That's the one that is never quite satisfied. That's the one who's going to get there in the end. The person that's still... And that's fine. That's how we have our... We're in these human bodies, at least for a minute, or at least for right now. And we have our human condition and our way of functioning and our schemes and problems, the way that we navigate the world. Nothing, not to denigrate that at all. Not to denigrate that. But when sitting... That's not the time to analyze that one. When sitting, there is just sitting, which sounds very obvious. But is that what we're involved in when sitting? Or are we doing something else? Are we still rearranging the deck chairs? Or are we still... What are we doing in that? And maybe this just is, you all, you know, you listen to this and you say, no, you don't have to, you can be quiet, you know. That's the one you're talking about, the true person of no rank. I understand that. That's my home. But if not, then look, just continue to look, not looking for something, not looking back or looking forward, but just look with the eyes, the ears, the heart and the body. Just look, sit with open inquiry, looking at self. Not the self that looks out and sees others. Not the one that looks out and is captivated by changing appearances. Rather the self that looks and sees itself in every direction. That knows itself in another's appearance. That knows itself in the sky and the trees. And the dirt. That true self that is always home. It says when he asked this question, somebody was fool enough to jump up. Right? Thereupon a monk asked, and this was really encouraged, this kind of live exchange, you know, he's putting it out there. And somebody who... Okay, I'm going to throw my hat in the ring, says, how about this? How about this true person of no rank? How about this true person of no rank? Throwing a challenge back at Rinzai. I remember years ago, I would, you know, just, and was working on koans, and I was working on this one koan with Roshi, and I was working out the Dharma combat in my mind in advance. So I was thinking, I'm going to go in and say this. Now he's probably, with a high degree of certainty, going to say this. I will then respond with this. And then he's, I think a couple of ways he could go. So I had like four or five responses worked out, and I'm primed. And I went in there, and I came out with this something, and Roshi said, no. And that was it. And then I got wrung out. So, but Dokusan is often, or working with teachers is often that way. You know, anyone who does Khan study knows there's a fair amount, you have to get used to failure and become very comfortable with failure, comfortable with rejection. But that's a part. Sounds very negative, but it can be a very positive thing. Yeah, because you just give everything away. You clear all of the dust and the cobwebs, bring all of this stuff up, and it just gets thrown out. So you got nothing left. You know, if we stay in our kind of safe zone of what's known and what we feel like we can kind of, we've got mapped out, and we never wander into the unknown territory, then you don't really stretch, you don't really grow. You just defend yourself in that way. It's always better to, or it's my encouragement, is to do what this monk does and throw their hat in the ring and to have a go. Because if you fail, you still win. But if you don't try, then everyone fails, teacher included. So he challenges Rinzai back and says, how about this true person of no rank? Maybe he knows something about this. Says Rinzai got down from the seat. So it'd be a chair, a raised chair that the teacher would sit in. Got down from there, came across the room. He's always very vital and energetic in his expression, Rinzai. He didn't say, come over here. It's like, oh no, I'll come to you. You know, he gets down off his chair and goes over and grabs a monk. You can imagine that. Got down from his seat and grabbed him. The monk hesitated. And that's a good point to look at. You know, Rinzai brings up this challenge. The monk says something in response. Rinzai moves to level two. The direct physical contact. And a grab comes down, or maybe level two is getting out of the chair and comes down, level three, he's coming over and grabs him, you know. Show me. If you understand this true person, if you stand toe to toe, really, if you know what that is, then what is that? When grabbed, how does he express? It says here that the monk hesitated, didn't know what to say, didn't know how to act. You know, which is like my rehearsing my responses beforehand. If he says this, then I'll say that. You wander out of living reality and rather into the headspace of how I think the world's going to be, how I think it's going to go. When this happens, I'll do that. And then life doesn't align. So this true person of no rank isn't functioning in, or isn't dependent on, if this happens, then that. Isn't dependent upon an intellectual understanding or a knowing that comes from words and systems, but rather always corresponds in alignment to reality, no matter what the circumstances are. Always matches exactly. Always matches exactly. That's our work or challenge as Zen practitioners. Not just in the practice of Zazen or sitting. You know, that is the skillful vehicle for inquiry. Sitting. Not a lot going on. Not involved in things. Clear. Clear space. Quiet. Look. But then if it ends as soon as we stand up and that's no longer Zazen, then that's not Zen. That's just entering and leaving meditation. For it to be real, there's no days off. There's no rest time. Whatever the activity is, whatever the expression is, that is Zazen, or that is Zen. Zaz just means to sit Zen. In the standing Zen, talking Zen, running Zen. Ford Crossing Zen, shopping in Trader Joe's Zen, whatever that activity is, we can naturally, this true person matches, corresponds, knows how to function. But if we're caught up and identified and enamored of this, of the identity that we carry around in our heads, you know, if that is being held so tight that it obscures this natural response, then we're the hesitating monk when grabbed. Ooh, that doesn't fit my plan. Doesn't know how to respond. Falls into confusion. The act has been called out. Rinzai knows how to expose an imposter. Knows how to expose that. Knows how to cure that. You know, the monk wins by losing. But had the courage to throw the hat in the ring. Had the courage to step into the place. Hesitates. All is lost. And Rinzai says, Rinzai pushed him away. You see, like, what a relentless teacher. This is like a glimpse into what somebody like this was like to practice with. And I said, oh, he let him go. No, he didn't let him go. He pushed him. So he's got... it's just relentless. Grabbed, hesitate, no. Pushed away. Saying... In these days, Rinzai would have had about, you know, he'd have been in constant litigation. Constantly. He'd have needed a team of lawyers for all the, like, the personal injury suits. And Rinzai pushed him away, saying, this true person of no rank, what a excrement or shit stick he is. Which, you know, I feel, I mean, is that praise or blame? Or praise or censure? He's still a person of no rank. This person of no rank is currently showing up as an idiot. It's not less than. It's not now separate from the herd. Everyone is that person of no rank, whether you hesitate or not. so-called enlightened or so-called deluded. You know, receiving Inca at the end of, you know, 30, 40 years into a life of practice, or just showed up for the first time for a Sunday morning program. Doesn't matter. Still the same true person. And no rank. Everyone is that. That's always available. No barrier. No gradations. No nothing to... no method that needs to be followed. Sure, we use methods. Methods are helpful. But right from the beginning, can be really greedy and directly answer Rinzai. Then it's not a matter of beginner or experienced or expert. There are ranks, we acknowledge them. Yeah. We know that they are necessary for us all to live and get along to whatever. Maybe we overuse them, or they get become distorted, like any kind of discrimination that we use, the way we chop life up, big shadows involved. But we can take on ranks. But if we confuse those ranks for the truth, then we're in trouble. You know, one who is really accomplished knows they have nothing. One who is really accomplished can rely completely on nothing at all. Anyway, I'd like to open it up for any questions or comments, anything anyone would like to raise up or share.
In real life with people, I find it really difficult to always stay aware of the person of no rank, whether it's me or even the other person.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so conditioned to respond the right way or the expected way. It's like automatically in any life situation, I'm just not the real person without rank, and it's very difficult for me out there in the real world. Being in a sesshin or here, there's space to consider that and to be aware of that, but out in the real world, I don't think I could accomplish that in this lifetime. It's very difficult.
Hmm. Well, you got to watch out for what you call in the real world, too, right? This is the real world of people. We're just wearing some odd clothes. But this is the real world of people. Inside and outside the gate isn't different. So it's really, you know, closing that gap for where Zen extends and where it ends. I agree that, you know, in a place of course, that's why, then why do we set up places like this? Yeah, because quiet, more solitude, less noise or less distraction, although we do pretty good on those things up here, actually. You know, is to help to make a container possible for real inquiry of depth. But we run it, of course, we always run into this thing over and over again. You get into, like, let's say, the more everyday world, right, of people and things and noise and bustle. We may feel like we're losing something, like I'm kind of losing my mojo, like I got lost in the stuff again. You know, and that's like why we call it a practice too. You know, the practice is close that gap. Wherever you are, that's it. You know, Tenshin Roshi would say that he would ask, he'd say to Maizumi Roshi over and over again, how do I take this into my everyday life? And he said, he'd asked him this several times, and then one time he asked him, and he's like, Tenshin, just do it. Like, just do it, you know? That's all you can really say.
It's interesting that you say, I call it jumping the track. It's like I feel I'm a train and I'm on one track, and all of a sudden I find myself on a different track.
Mm-hmm.
And the jumping the track occurs when I react to other people. And the more, I don't know, everyday people or the conditioned people or whatever, the more, I don't know how to say this without sounding judgmental, but
yeah,
it, with people who are also practicing, even if it's a different discipline, it is easier to stay in the track that I want to be in the Zen track. And with people who are not practicing, I'm still influenced by their expectations and their thoughts and their opinions of me.
Yeah.
And I literally notice my train jumping the track. And then I have to come back. It takes effort for me to move my train back on the track I want to be on. And it's like a yo-yo.
Mm-hmm.
For me.
Oh, I'm sure for others too. Would anyone else like to add to that or respond to that? What Larissa's raising up?
Well, I can understand what she's saying.
Yeah.
And I can relate to that. But I think by coming to the practice and coming to listen to you on Sundays helps bring you back focus.
Hmm. Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
I relate to you. And I think with this one, I was listening to the koan, what it brought up for me was this true person of no rank gets confused. And this true person of no rank hesitates all the time. And this true person of no rank has no fucking idea how to match all the different circumstances
right.
that arise in a daily. And just doing my best, you know?
Yeah.
And I think when I first started practicing and got into koan study, I wanted, and I had this idea that one day I would just be matching, you know?
Right.
Each circumstance as it came forward in such a skillful way. And I don't feel that way anymore.
Yeah.
I just feel like this is my life. And I'm doing my best with it. And there's deep peace, and then there's all this uncomfortable kind of karma that I have that I can't even understand. And it's all here. And this is just very mysterious,
mm-hmm.
how it all is. But that I struggle, or I don't like that idea that one day we'll just be matching, you know? One day we'll be in accord. Like, I feel like we're just always coming into accord. Or not. And becoming aware of that and adjusting. And I'm just aware of how limited I am when it comes to responding in a way that would really reach a person. Sometimes that happens. Sometimes there's just,
right.
It's like a tremendous gap. And that's okay.
Yeah, that's okay. That's responding in accord. You know, the difference is, you know, we set this thing up. It's set up to, you look at this intrinsic, all often we look at this intrinsic aspect to raise up the true person, a no rank, right? We look at that as an intrinsic aspect of self, because most people are, a lot of it, we don't look there. We don't look close to home. We don't look close enough. So we're always trying to do something somewhat on the outside. So we're admonished over and over to look intrinsically at that. And to do that, we then set up this, not the self, it's, you know, the name and all of this other stuff. Look at this one. There's not two selves going on there. It's a device. It's something that we raise. It's like when we talk about absolute and relative. I used to think that they were things for years, but there was something called the absolute. Or the relative, or form and emptiness. These are devices raised up so you understand the perspective. But it's not two things. But for most of us, it takes looking at it from those perspectives over and over until you really are sure that there's not another life. You really are sure that this is it. And then when you match reality, you match it with your perfect broken confusion and failings, that's the full human life. But you don't imagine, you don't now know that there's nothing wrong with it. You now know that it's not lacking. You're not looking for something else. So, you know, it's like what you raise, that's consistent with. Yeah, so it's always somewhat provisional to even separate these aspects in that way. You just look at it this way. But without doing that, you don't go from the place of confusion and inquiry to the place of seamless integration without unpacking it. Anyway. Yeah.
It's funny. you know, when you mentioned jumping train tracks, it reminded me of, you know, just this last holiday, actually, going back to visit my family. And, you know, my family and I were playing a game, and my little brother gets, like, so competitive and turns into such a sore loser. And he was, like, being really difficult and kind of salty and, like, and then he said, like, one thing, it was, like, one sentence, and it just brought me to, like, I was, like, you know, it charged me up. And suddenly it felt like years of practice were just came to a halt by one sentence, you know. Where did it all go?
Yeah.
Suddenly it felt like hitting a wall, but then, because, like, the story started of, like, well, I shouldn't act this way because I am a Zen person, or, you know, I live at a Zen center. But that's the wall for me. And when I realized, well, no, there isn't one way I should be or act, that's when I was, you know, able to, you know, look at, well, yeah, there's, you know, I have many ways of responding and looking at this, but, you know, to tell myself that I shouldn't feel a certain way or I have to act a certain way, that's where, you know, I get tripped up. Yeah. And it's just funny. And certainly relate to, you know, jumping train tracks. And it happens for sure for me.
Yeah, it was, I think it was Eckhart Tolle said that if you want to test how enlightened you are, go home and see your family for a week.
It was actually Ram Dass.
Was it Ram Dass? Okay, Ram Dass. Yeah, all right. That's right, that's right.
Yes, my favorite quote of his. If you think you're enlightened, go spend a week with
your Yeah.
So you had mentioned something about the tracks, outside versus inside, and the people on the outside that have expectations. And as a yoga professional, there are a lot of expectations that I'm to act a certain way or eat a certain way or think a certain way. And when you're live in a classroom with people, anything can happen, as you know. And there'll be a disturbance in the classroom at a gym that I teach, and I'll have to very firmly say, as I'm nice and calm, please don't come in right now. And the students are freaked for just a second, and they're like, that wasn't very yogic. Maybe not, but it was very Zen.
Mm-hmm.
And I know they don't understand that, because Zen is misused in yoga constantly as a still point, as drop into Zen and be calm and serene. And it's interesting because there is that expectation. And I tell my students quite honestly, I practice what I practice to better myself, to deal with my detritus, with my junk. But I'm not a Hindu. And it's funny how there's that expectation. It's unreal.
Mm-hmm.
So I do know what you mean, because I deal with that constantly. And for as long as I do this, I probably will. But I do always tell them, no, it's very Zen, and I know they don't know what I mean, and that's okay. But what I mean by that is it's very instantaneous in the moment. Somebody interrupted us, and I stopped it. I didn't wait. I didn't try to make it look pretty or package it nice. Just please leave.
Mm-hmm.
In the moment, right now.
Just watch out you don't graduate to grabbing people. That's what you...
No, I really try not to touch my students.
I'll get you in some trouble in Encinitas.
Lots of trouble.
Thank you. Okay. Well, any last thoughts before we finish for lunch?
Yeah, I have one.
Okay.
So yesterday I was reading some Hakuin.
Mm-hmm.
And after Hakuin had this realization, he went to see his teacher, Shoju Roshi, I think.
Yep.
And they were talking, and Shoju Roshi said, now, you know, you really need to, bring your Zazen into your daily life. You really need to, he called it constant and unremitting practice.
Mm.
Constant practice in your daily life, whatever you're doing, you know, look at things, look at yourself and situations, and he went on to say that practice in the midst of activity, so practice in the midst of working in an office or standing in line at the post office or driving down the road, he said, this practice, compared to practice on the cushion, he said it's something like 100 or 1,000, even a million times more beneficial than practice on the cushion. So, I mean, it sounds like when you were talking about, you know, that even just that awareness that you have that situations are different, there's expectations, people are doing this. I mean, it sounds like you were bringing your practice from the cushion to your work or to wherever you are.
It feels that way to me, but I'm aware of how difficult it is to keep that space around me to be able to do. It's like there in my face. Not literally, but figuratively speaking. It's
Are they going in and out of your face?
Still push them. Like you inside, push them away.
Well, maybe that's why it's a million times more valuable, because it's so difficult.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, you actually have to like deal with people.
Thank you, everyone.